And now let's get back to Peter Schenck and the Peter Principle in progress.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. In an article from Stanford University Medical Center, there was a recent study, and the study came up with this theory. Racial groupings match genetic profiles, Stanford study finds. Checking a box next to a racial ethnic category gives several pieces of information about people. The continent where their ancestors were born, the possible color of their skin, and perhaps something about their risk of different diseases. But a new study by researchers at the Stanford University School of Medicine finds that the checkbox also says something about a person's genetic background. This work comes on the heels of several contradictory studies about the genetic basis of race. Some found that race is a social construct with no genetic basis, while others suggested that clear genetic differences exist between people of different races. What makes the current study published in the February issue of the American Journal of Human Genetics more conclusive is its size. The study is by far the largest, consisting of 3,636 people who all identified themselves as either white, African American, East Asian, or Hispanic. Of these, only five individuals had DNA that matched an ethnic group different than the box they checked at the beginning of the study. That's an error rate of 0.14%. According to Neil Risch, Ph.D., a UCSF professor who led the study, while he was professor of genetics at Stanford, the findings are particularly surprising given that people in both African American and Hispanic ethnic groups often have a mixed background. We might expect these individuals to cross several different genetic clusters, Risch said. This is especially true for Hispanics, who are often a mix of Native American, white, and African American ancestry. But that's not what the study found. Instead, each self-identified racial ethnic group clumped into the same genetic cluster. Well, this brings me to my next guest, Alex Linder. Alex, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, sir, for coming on the air this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Before we start, I'd like you to basically tell the audience very briefly what you're representing right now. You have a new political party that you represent.
Yeah, it's called the White Freedom Party.
And you're also a writer or an editor, I think, for a magazine. Is that correct?
Well, I have a website. I come from a professional conservative background. I'm in racialism once I saw how things worked with the better part of a decade spent in trade journalism. But my love was politics, and I got back into that about 97, and we've done Vanguard News Network since about 2000, so that's about 4.5 years. And recently a few of us have tried to make the next step and move on to politics directly.
And what magazines did you used to write for or work for?
Well, I worked for the American Spectator, and I also worked for Evans and Novak, and I mostly did research for them. Back in 89, I went to Pomona College, which is in Claremont, California, and I graduated in 1988 with a degree in international relations. Then I went out to D.C., and I worked for The Spectator, and I came to see the reality of it was that I had thought that, well, I'm going to finally have a chance to write satire making fun of Jews and blacks, who it was clear to me was the obvious target that needed to be mocked. And that just doesn't go. You can't do it. And so I came to see that there was a line that you couldn't cross. And slowly but surely I began to piece together what the deal was exactly. And it kind of crystallized when I read John Murray Cudahy's The Ordeal of Civility, which points out it's a very high-level writing. It's basically graduate school writing. And it's not as accessible as what Kevin McDonald does, but it's along the same lines. It basically points out that Jews put forward these theories that they maintain are objective and scientific, but basically they conceal their own ethnic interests, and they are at war with our people.
And what do you think compels them to be at war with the rest of us?
Partly biological, and it's partly cultural, in that they've done studies, McDonald cites this, I don't know the name of the study, but they'll take a baby from an Aryan couple and a baby from a Jewish couple, and they'll take them away from their parents, and they'll put them somewhere, and they'll expose them to an unknown third party. And the Jewish babies will go nuts, because they have kind of built-in, I always think of it as antennae, they have built-in paranoia that whites don't have. The white babies don't react nearly as strongly. So it's kind of ironic that they call us the xenophobes and the racist when they have a much stronger biological basis of racism. And, in fact, that's why they dominate us now, because we tend to judge people as individuals. Of course, Christianity on top of that, a religion given to us by our racial competitor, teaches us further that, you know, the golden rule and treat people one by one. Well, Jews don't do that. And they build a great security fence.
But wouldn't many Jews be considered Caucasian?
Yeah, a lot of people would say they're Caucasian. They're basically sort of a subset, sort of a hybrid, and they're extremely inbred also. So they do form. They're not purely a race. You got to think of them as kind of a racial cultural hybrid that has thousands of years experience moving among other people while maintaining its own unity and its own bloodlines. And the better to rook us and to fool us. And anybody who's been around Jews will see that, indeed, as they used to say, you know, they're British in public, but they're Yiddish in private. They show you one face, but they keep another for themselves.
Well, your experience as a spectator, that must have been something. What was the point in your relationship with the spectator when your boss came up to you and said, enough's enough, or did you just quit?
No, it wasn't like that. I was never a writer or a big name. What it was it's very hard to get in these places. At that time, this is before the Internet.
Sure.
And there's maybe, you know, three or four editorial slots nationwide, and I happened to get in. And they were completely happy with my work. But there's only a couple slots for people who are actually going to go on to the editorial track. And what I believe in retrospect, I showed them something that I'd written in college called Of Color with a second F in parentheses, or off color, making fun of the term of color.
Sure.
And it was a real turning point in my life. I mean, I looked in his eyes and I could see, he's like, we take that very, very seriously. And I realized that that's what it is, man. These guys are scared. They don't want anything that's touching on the minority stuff, and that's obviously what needs to be done. And to me, it's the distinction between big and little. I mean, if you're gonna say little and mock Germans and mock Arabs like the professional conservatives do, that's just ridiculous. I mean, you can go over to National Review and read really vicious assaults on France and on Germany, where my ancestors came from, and probably a lot of the people who are listening to you's ancestors came from, and probably your own too. And these people attack Germany and Arabs, and you know, all bets are off. But by God, you better never turn and attack them. But that's what I wanted to do, and you know, if I couldn't write in terms of being free to write what I think needs to be written, then I'm not going to do it. And it really stunned me. I mean, I was about 22, and I had the ideal position. I was thrown for a loop for about 6 months. I didn't know what to do, but I had to have money coming in, so I went into trade journalism, where I could keep my principles and still, you know, earn a living, if not doing what I wanted to do. But then, thank God for the Internet. Because as all the racialist sites now are doing very well in Alexa, and that shows you what people really think. What they don't understand is that professional conservatism, like The Spectator when I was there, is basically it appears to be Catholic, or even Irish Catholic in particular. But they're
like,
all
like
following
the
line that's set down by Jews,
yeah.
And they will never cross it. And, you know, even today we see that, you know, it's just totally dominated by neoconservatives, which is... Not all neoconservatives are Jews, but the Jews are the ones who set the line that the sycophants and the toadies, like Ann Coulter and that type, follow. And they're basically cheerleaders, but the Jews are the football players.
What was your experience with Evans and Novak?
Oh, it was good. I enjoyed working. I worked with Evans a little more than Novak, but you know, they've got a big. They have a little cramped office right across from the White House, and I did research for them and before they'd go on their shows. And they're real hardworking guys, and even though Novak has a Jewish background, and I would consider him a Jew, they prepared for their shows, and I'd use the Newsweek library and get clippings and amass data for them. They'd go on there. And I worked there for, maybe 6 or 8 weeks. And they also were doing a couple of newsletters and reports that they were trying to sell. Stuff that ended up, being published by people I actually later worked for, Tom Phillips, who does one of the largest newsletter publishers in the country. But you find that the roads tend to, of anybody who's right-wing, it tends to cross back and forth. But, again, this is also what I call, what Joe Soberman called Semitically correct. It's all stuff that's safe on the Jew line. It's just that Novak happens to be a little more critical than a lot in terms of the foreign policy.
Did you ever think about working for, let's say, the American Conservative magazine or Sam Francis? And did you ever work with Sam Francis?
No, I criticized Sam Francis often, and I wrote him several times. I gave him a chance to respond to my arguments, and he did through back channels, but... in fact, I've got something posted on top of my website today that makes exactly the points. Someone going to him and saying, why don't you tell the truth about Jews? And he's saying, well, it's not Jews. And then at the same time, he'll say, well, it is Jews, but I can't say that because, the people won't publish me. So this is the big thing. There's this dirty secret that underlies all media, which is this absolute fear of the Jews. And I just decided personally, I'm not afraid of the Jews. They're going to be afraid of me. And I go after them directly and aggressively, and that's the kind of people that we want writing for VNN and joining our party. And the rest of this stuff is basically useless because it's telling people that, blacks are these great criminals and Mexicans are invading our country. Well, there's not one person in America that doesn't know that. I don't care where I've lived the last 10, 15 years. It's invaded by Mexicans. You see them all over the place. And that blacks are criminals, I mean, most whites move away from blacks if they have any money. I saw a stat just the other day, and they said something like 80% of whites live around or live in an area that's basically 85% white. So,
well, most successful blacks move away from black neighborhoods as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there used to be a phrase, a talented tenth. And what segregation did was allow those to escape their neighborhood and leave the rest of the coloreds basically headless and free to go wild and subsidized by tax dollars ripped out of whites' hands by the Jews who control this country. And, yeah, the top 10% of blacks, of course they want to live around more civilized whites in their own little pockets.
Well,
but we pay the price for that.
Alex, I notice you don't differentiate between, let's say, Zionists and Jews. I mean, why is that?
Because they all benefit from being Jews, hugely. And they all ultimately, no matter what they say, when it comes down to it, they all go back to their racist protect the Jews mentality. And their self-protection hurts us. And you see that in Europe. I was just looking at an article before I came on about how the Jews in Europe are now all moving to the right, just like here. All they care about is Israel. They don't give a damn about our country. And what we have to do to get back at them is to bring out the connection between the Jews and the open borders that we have now. They believe that diversity is good for Jews. We know it's horrible for us. It's literally driving us to extinction. We got to bring out, they were the only pressure that led to that overturning of that 65 Act. It's funny. I mean, you read the debates back in the congressional debates back in 24, and they had just got off the boat, and they were accusing our senators of being racist for trying to protect the stock of people already in the country. And they're really the most hateful, vicious racists in the world. And, yeah, not every single one is obviously the part of the political hierarchy that makes these decisions, but ultimately they all benefit for it. They're all putting in money to these groups like the ADL.
Well, there's a group called the Nutra Carta. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
But they are dead set against Zionist Palestine and protest quite often and believe that it's blasphemous for the state of Israel to even exist before the Messiah returns.
Yeah, sure, I understand that. There's also Jews like Paul Gottfried, and there's Jews like Aaron Zellman at the JPFO who are out there to make it appear that Jews are on all sides of every question, but look what ultimately happens. The Jews who win and dominate are pushing things in an anti-Aryan direction. Great for those few, those handful of people.
So even if you had some Jews approach you that, let's say from the Nutra Carta, that said, we have something in common, you're against the state of Israel, so are we, let's work together, you would not be for that?
I definitely keep them at arm's length. Okay. Even if I'd say, yeah, go ahead, keep doing what you're doing. You show me what actual effect you can have. But I would not work. I would work with black groups or Mexican groups, but I would not work with Jewish groups in that regard. No, they're simply too connected. They're too powerful. They have too strong of a group feeling that if you let them into something, they're going to dominate it in time, every single time.
Okay. Well, I have some callers in the hopper here. Are you ready to take some phone
calls?
Sure. Yes. Okay. Let's go to Martin in Missouri. Come on in, Martin. You're on the air, live on the screen, uncensored.
Well. No, Alex Linder knows me, Martin Lindstedt, and I was with him up in Topeka last May 15th. And I've heard that quite a few of Mr. Linder's worshipers are going to go ahead and call him and support him. But I'm not.
You get on first, Marty, so go ahead.
Okay, well, he knows I don't like being called Marty, but in any case.
Martin, excuse me.
Okay, well, thank you, Alex, and I'm going to be polite. What happens is that what you said so far is absolutely pretty well correct here. What happens is that the reason, yes, and I agree, I'm Chris Randini, I agree 100% with what you say about the Jews here. In fact, I'd probably go further. But the problem of it is that over the last year or so, you've gone ahead and taken on a bunch of federal informants. Glenn Miller being one of them, and another guy named Todd Van Biber, who also went ahead and betrayed his comrades in terms for a lighter sentence. And pretty well, Alex's audience is very, very, very small. We've talked about the choice of his words, and I pretty well defended that. And the reason I defended that is that is who Alex Linder's audience is. It's a pretty well, it's young, white skinheads. But
no, that's not true. There's actually very few skinheads who are associated with our site. And what you're talking about, readers or listeners should know, is discussed in our forum at vnnforum.com. There's threads discussing the various things that Martin's raised.
Mm-hmm.
Martin, do you have a question for Alex?
Well, I wanted to go ahead and make points about his White Freedom Party. Back in 1992...
You're going to have to hang on there, Martin. When we come right back, we'll have Martin Lindstedt, Todd from Florida, Dave in Texas, Raphael in New Jersey, and our guest, Alex Linder. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Peter Principle. I'm your host, Peter Schenck. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My guest today is Alex Linder. Alex used to work for the American Spectator, Evans and Novak, and right now he has a political party called the White Freedom Party. We have Martin Lindstedt on. Martin, why don't you ask Alex a question or make a point?
Okay. The point of it is that I wanted to also mention the Todd from Florida is a Todd Van Biber who was caught making pipe bombs. One blew up in his face, and he got out of a 60-year prison term and by pretty well knocking on his buddies. But in the case of political parties in Missouri, and I know what I'm talking about because I've ran as a libertarian, a reformer, a Republican, and I've run for U.S. Senator 3 times and U.S. Governor of Missouri 2 times. And in order to form a new political party, you need to have 10,000 signed petitive initiative signatures from registered voters. And the people who collect that have to be registered voters themselves and have to go ahead and give their address. Now, 1992, which was a while ago, 12 years ago, the Libertarian Party got on, but how they got on is that it cost $40,000, and they had to go ahead, they used volunteers, and they used petition signatures. Since then, the time to go ahead and collect those signatures has been reduced by over a third, from about 6 months to either 3 or 4 months to collect those signatures. So you have to spend more money and more time doing it. Now, can you imagine most of Alex Linder's friends going ahead and actually going out from behind their computer desk and trying to go ahead and get signatures, and then they go to the average white person, and they're saying, will you sign to form this political party, which says White Freedom Party? Now, you can pretty well cut, in the 1st Congressional District, which is mainly black in St. Louis, and 5th Congressional District, which is mainly black in Kansas City, but even among the other 7 Congressional Districts, I don't think they're going to go ahead and find that many people to go ahead and do it.
All right, well, let's find out what Alex has to say.
Well, we're getting started. We'll move forward. You don't have to run under your own banner necessarily. I think the key thing is to get people out there speaking out against the war in Iraq, for one thing, and then that's more important than the formal stuff. Certainly, he's right that the system is rigged increasingly more tightly against third parties coming in. But it's more about candidates and the message than it is the formal party registration.
At least
in the opening stages.
Yeah, Martin.
As you go on, certainly, yes, that has to be dealt with.
Okay, well, I'm just simply talking about that. What happens to the libertarians? It costs $40,000 for an innocuous name like Libertarian, as opposed to, say, White Freedom Party. But another point is that to go ahead and get these petitioners, it requires a good deal of money. And people, especially in the movement, are going to want to know where you got the money from. And most people say is that what happens, the government gave it to Glenn Miller, who ended up giving it to Alex Linder. And
all right, Martin, we're going to move on now. Thank you for the phone call.
Okay.
I don't know. What do you think, Alex?
Well, he's got his own agenda. He's a Christian identity, which is a little bit nutty. But
he's
right. There are institutional problems, but what I want to do, my main mission of running, is to get out there and speak against the war.
Where are you going to get the money, he wants to know?
Oh, you don't need money. If money were the problem, I mean, it wouldn't be worth starting.
Okay.
The point is to get out there and speak. You got to collect stuff. I would never, absolutely never take money from people and go out and use it to do stuff like voter registration.
All right, now
we're mainly media-focused.
I see.
And we're putting together a number of candidates. You can run as a Democrat or Republican or whatever you want and get speaking invitations and come out against the one-party system.
And that's exactly what it is, a one-party system.
Yeah, I mean, it's got two wings, but it's a governing party, and the stuff that they're agreed on, they only allow debate between two polls, and no one's allowed to... The system is grounded on the lie that the races are equal. And if you speak against that, you're not going to have any help from the system, but that is the most important thing that you can do, is to point out the racial interests that are being denied, and we aim to represent the white interests overtly.
Well, Alex, hold on. We're going to be right back with a break here.
Okay.
Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Peter Principle. I'm your host, Peter Schenck. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My guest today is Alex Linder from the White Freedom Party. Alex, the White Freedom Party, do you have a platform, or let's say, do you have a plank in your platform regarding public education?
Well, we think it should fly under its real color, which is state indoctrination centers teaching a Jewish agenda. In fact, I actually think that the growth in homeschooling is really remarkable in that regard. And as soon as I have children, which should be fairly soon, I'm going to educate them at home. And there's basically about 48 million school children, and there's about 1 to 2 million, depending on whether you believe the government or the homeschoolers, who are homeschooling now, and that's been growing very rapidly. And I think that that is sort of the ultimate rejection of ZOG, as we call it, Zionist occupation government. People, and a lot of times they're Christians and they won't say it, but they're very clearly rejecting this system. And at some point, when it grows large enough, that's going to become a real flashpoint with regard to the New World Order. So, yeah, our party is completely against public education. At least the basic point there is that the schools are having there, no matter where they are, since we don't have any states' rights anymore, the agenda is being set by the Department of Education, and that basically is going to mean some Jews teaching these kids everything that's not really true. And all the textbooks come from about one of a handful of suppliers. I think there's only about 4 that Diane Ravitch mentions in her book about thought police. And so they're all learning the same agenda, and the agenda is a New World Order agenda. And that's not good for kids, and I try to sum everything up. I'd say that public schools are a socially acceptable form of child abuse.
Absolutely. I'd take it a step further. The schools, not only, I wouldn't say they teach them anything. They teach the kids how to go to sleep.
They teach them how to be bored and how to be passive.
They turn their brains off by not challenging them with anything.
And they say no child left behind. Well, think about this. Back in the 50s, they illegally, this is what we demonstrated against in Topeka against Brown versus Board of Education, they integrated white students with blacks after that. And that today they're actually integrating literally retarded kids with into normal classrooms. And they put in, I believe, a multiple of the money that they put into educating normal kids, they put into what they call special kids.
Sure.
That's just obscene. And that parents put up with this is ridiculous. Well, and they need to use the freedom that was re-won in the 80s, because homeschooling was illegal before then, to take their kids out. And even though they have to pay, still have to pay the taxes, at least they're able to control what goes into their child's head. There's really no way you can beat Zog at this point other than withdrawing and then joining with like minds, and that's what we're doing. My basic thing is I've been doing a website with daily news and commentary for 5 years, and the next step is to turn it into a whole life thing, not even just a political party. That's still one aspect of it or one prong. But the whole thing is just we aren't going to go down, and we aren't going to stay on the tracks and get run over by the Zog train. We're going to withdraw to the extent we can and regroup and form something that can fight back. And I don't know exactly what form that has to take, but I know exactly what has to be done. And I know exactly who the main problem is, and it's Jews.
All right.
You'll never read that in a paper, but that's the God's own truth.
Right now we have Todd in Florida. You have a question or a statement for Alex Linder. Come on in.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to what he was saying, that the importance of having a political party and the objective, the main objective shouldn't be too much to try to get people into office. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of boundaries that we would have to overcome, and it seems pretty impossible that we could get a candidate who, you know, comes out and says, yeah, you know, maybe we should deport these Mexicans out of the country. You know, that seems really far-fetched. But the fact of the matter is that there are a huge number of white Americans who don't vote. They realize that there's no difference between the current Democrats and the Republicans, that the Republicans don't represent conservative values anymore. And they do realize that Mexicans are invading the country. They realize blacks are a minority of the population, and they commit a majority of the violent crime. The problem is they don't know why all of this is happening. And what a political party could do, like the white political party that Alex is talking about, is that they could use the platform of, like, say, a presidential election to get the message out there and say, look, these are the problems that white people are facing, and these are the things that could be done. And if we could steer everybody away from the cookie-cutter issues, like, you know, like abortion and some of the things that Bush and Kerry
gay marriage?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Those are things that they're partisan issues, and they don't affect America. America's on goal line defense, especially the white race. And what we need to do is tell people why the Iraq war is happening, who's responsible for it, and really who benefits from it. White Americans don't benefit from the Iraq war. The only people benefiting from it are Jews and Israel. Okay, so that's the main message, is to use the
campaign
to get our message out. And also, you have to keep in mind is that during a political campaign, people aren't really impressed with people who come out and speak and talk about cookie-cutter issues. But if somebody stands up and says, hey, look, we're sick of the blacks, we're sick of the Mexicans, yeah, it's extreme what we're talking about, but extreme circumstances require extreme solutions. And if we have to deport all the Mexicans and we have to sterilize all the blacks, well, you know what? If that means that the white girl doesn't get raped and somebody getting killed, well, then so be it. And a lot of people would be impressed with that. And you may have a lot of people coming out of the closet and voting for people who say things like that.
I think Todd's right that there is definitely a body that is called apathetic, but is actually knows that there's no difference between the parties. What our party is going to do is overtly and explicitly advocate white Aryan interests. Nobody does that. Everybody thinks, oh, you know, the conservatives really represent white people, but they don't. If you track down what Buchanan actually says, they are as egalitarian and anti-racial as the next guy.
Definitely.
And there's just nobody out there representing the interests of white people, and you don't get somewhere by indirection. That's something that the Jews are much better at. We go out there and we just say, look, we're white. vote for us. We're going to defend and advocate your interests, not blacks' interests, not Mexican interests, not individuals' interests, but white interests, because you're getting screwed by a system that has you as a third-class citizen, not even a second-class. Jews are the first class. The minorities are interposed between them and us, and we are the bottom rung. All we're here to do is to basically die out and provide them tax money to build colonies of these disgusting creatures from God knows where they're coming from now, Guatemala, in our midst, and to subsidize blacks in, you know, 8A housing.
Right.
And there's a huge body of pent-up anger about this stuff, and no one will ever address it. And well, we're not going to do any kind of Pat Buchanan garbage where we're kind of winking at him or Sam Francis some of this other.
Well, thank you, Todd, for the phone call.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
All right, Alex, I'm just kind of perplexed, slightly. Mike, I guess what I'm thinking is this idea of Zionism and the New World Order seems to be such a pervasive attack on America. I think that we need as many people as we can get to fight this globalism, New World Order. If you alienate yourselves from let's say the Hispanic groups or the black groups, isn't that going to make your job that much more impossible?
Well, I don't think we've ever really had anything in common with them beyond certain blacks teach some degree of self-respect. But when they teach that you were formed by a mad scientist, like Farrakhan's guys do, you know, how far can you work with people that are that crazy? If they were a little more competent, yeah, we could work with them. And how about La Raza? We don't have anything to bring to the table. They can go, look, we have incredible demographic swell in the Southwest and basically all over the country now. What are you going to do for me? There's nothing that we can do for them. Our interests simply lie in avoiding them, getting rid of them.
What about the Americans that are Hispanic or black that believe in the Founding Fathers' philosophy, that believe in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and are we just going to discount them?
They're a tiny and insignificant minority. I mean, you might as well go whole hog and say that, you know, the average Hispanic is going to become a tax-paying Republican conservative, and they've got great family values. I mean, ask anybody who calls in what it's actually like to live around Mexicans. I'll give you an example of how the world works here in Kirksville, which is not particularly full of Mexicans. I mean, you got to go to Milan, as they pronounce it here, 20 miles down the road, where there's some processing where they are. But there's three Mexican restaurants in this little tiny town in northeastern Missouri of 17,000 people. One of them, I've heard through the grapevine, has, you know, a couple of trailers full of Mexicans who are working in his restaurants, and they cause the police staff to go over there about once a week. And those people simply destroy an area. You ask anybody who's lived in L.A., they overpopulate and destroy. And they reproduce in such incredible numbers that there's little that can be done other than to keep them out. And if we didn't have Jews running the country, no American majority ever voted to allow Mexican invasion. So how does it happen? Why is it never why is the why never discussed in the paper? Well, I've got the answers. The answer is that the media is controlled by Jews, and Jews see it as in their interest to have an open borders policy. Killing us. They're putting our people and the conditions we need to reproduce and survive off limits. They are driving us out of the country.
Which I go back to my first question. That is the main problem. Would be Zionists. And so,
no, it's not Zionism. It's Jews.
Well, you know,
Zionism is, you know, whether a Jew is a Zionist or not, they love having a racialist homeland, and then they love also being able to come over here. How do these people go everywhere? How does a columnist like Alana Mercer go from South Africa? Oh, now she's in Canada. Oh, now she's here. Oh, now she's writing for half the papers in the country.
As you refer to the acronym ZOG, Zionist Occupied Government, I'm referring to the term Zionist as well. So my question is, if Zionism is the main culprit, if they're behind all of this, don't we need as many people as we can get from as many different groups as we can get to fight the Zionist occupied government?
I think we just need a very determined group of just plain white people. I don't see where Mexicans and blacks, in my opinion, are basically headless communities.
Because
you know that blacks didn't create the NAACP, Jews created it.
I'm very well aware of that, yes.
And you know that Jews overturned the Act in 65, the racialist protections we had. They overturned the racialist protections from South America and the Third World, and they overturned, in the name of civil rights, they overturned free association. So they killed both our self-protection internally via segregation, and they killed our borders. and thereby exposed us to these people. So in and of themselves, blacks and Mexicans are known entities that we can deal with.
I just feel that the different racial groups are being pitted against each other by the Zionists, and I believe that if you were to eliminate the Zionist influence, many of these groups would assimilate, and we would be getting along with them much better than we are now.
Well, we probably disagree on that. I would go with Jefferson saying that the two races, black and white, equally free, cannot live in the same government. And remember, we only brought over 3 or 4 million of them to America, and now there's about 35 million and growing, with just about exactly the same number of Hispanics. And I don't want to live in an Hispanic area or a black area, and I have.
I believe Louis Farrakhan would probably agree with you as well.
Well, I would work with him, you know, to the extent he feels that. But, you know what the background of his philosophy is. The spaceships and the numerology and the belief that whites were formed by a crazy black scientist. So,
well, let's move on to Raphael in New Jersey.
Okay.
Raphael, come on in. You're on the air live, unscreened, uncensored. Come on in, Raphael.
Hello? Yeah, Peter.
Hello?
Hello, Peter?
Yes.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. Appreciate the chance to talk. My comment was for Mr. Linder. I've been a reader, a lurker, if you will, on the BNN forum and certain other white forums online. Let's see, a little preamble on me. I am not white. I am a Hispanic of mostly European descent, but not entirely. So, just wanted to say that my comment was regarding the, what you said about the white leadership aligning with, the leadership of La Raza and Nation of Islam, those people that have some awareness of Zionism and how the Jews seem to be pulling all the strings. I wanted to ask Mr. Linder, does he think it is feasible at any time in the future for that kind of alliance to,
Answer that.
Okay, hold on, fellas. We'll be right back.
After the break, I'll answer that.
We'll hold you over, Raphael. We'll hold you over after this break. We'll have Alex answer that question. This is the Peter Principle. I'm your host, Peter Shank. Stay tuned. All right, we have Raphael. Raphael, please restate your question to Alex Linder.
I just basically wanted Mr. Linder to voice his opinion on whether at this point, with the huge, I guess you can say 2004 was the year of the Jew, with the war in Iraq and
mm-hmm.
They seem to be stepping up their propaganda on racism and such. Would it be feasible to involve, certain leaderships of other groups who seem to be Jew-wise in forming some sort of alliance and saying, us, we're always going to have our differences, we weren't made the same way, so why not, mm-hmm. Work together for our separate interests and because we know who the enemy is. Do you think that's feasible at any time in the future?
It might be at some point. I think that today La Raza is a big and powerful organization. And the dominant demographic fact is that more and more Mexicans are coming into the U.S. every night. And they're going to go to someone like me and say, what do you represent? Who do you have? And they're just going to go, ha, you're nothing. Until there's some white body that has huge numbers and pull behind it, there's no ability to cut deals. But in a tactical sense, in the day-to-day, there could be an anti-Zionist coalition of people who are tired of seeing their own kids, from the barrio or whatever, from rural America dying in these Jews wars. And certainly, you want to look at I'm sure you're familiar with the Voz de Aztlan, which is kind of a Mexican nationalist publication. We all kind of hit on the same thing. And as the Mexicans grow increasingly powerful in the Southwest and the L.A. area or Southern California area in particular, the Jews are starting to get a little worried and almost even double think think twice on open borders. So that's definitely a trend you want to watch in the future. So when they think there's enough, they're going to do whatever they think is best for them. And if they think there's too many Mexicans and they're too powerful, then they'll turn on them, just as they use the Mexicans to undercut the whites and just as they use the blacks to undercut the whites. If those positions ever change and start to undermine their own position, they will reverse on them because all that they care about is what is good for Jews.
Well, I think the minute you see a draft, when they start drafting Americans across the board to fight
mm-hmm.
in the Middle East, you're going to see a lot of people change their opinion on this war.
I agree, but I don't know if they'll. I don't know if they. They're so full of chutzpah. They're so absolutely unable to see themselves for what they are. I don't know if they will actually try to do a draft. I've read a lot of people who claim they will, but I don't think that will work the way that they might think it will. Hmm. I think there will be great resistance to that. People will finally, they'll look up from what they're doing, and they'll look and they'll say, why are we over there 8,000 miles away? We don't even defend our own border. I use this on my relatives in Arizona. I say, you know, you like Bush. Why do you like Bush? You know, why are our troops 8,000 miles away in Iraq and not protecting our border down in Arizona?
What do they say to you? What do they say to you?
Well, you know, they kind of come around. It's very difficult to wean people away from the O'Reilly Fox sort of point of view.
Oh, yeah.
If you're making a very simple connection, why do we have 100,000-plus troops in Iraq? Iraq never attacked us.
Yet
we're being invaded by the third world. It's making everybody's life worse.
I sympathize with you. My family is also a Fox News they're addicts for Fox News, and I have to hear all this rubbish constantly. I can't argue with them.
A lot of it is part of it is generational, and that people who are older tend to have a respect for authority that is extremely deep and very hard to uproot. And they believe at the end of the day, the government may do 99 things wrong, but its heart is always in the right place ultimately. Everything the government does, they will interpret as a mistake rather than, no, these people don't like you. They're out to get you. They're out to milk you and finally destroy you. They are a gang and they are your enemy. And they are controlled by an ethnic group that hates your group and hates all other people.
Well,
have you ever seen a Jew described as a hater? Have you ever seen a Jewish group called a hate group?
Never, no, of course not.
Never.
Thank you, Raphael, for the phone call.
Thanks, Raphael.
Let's go to John in Nevada. You're on the air live, unscreened, uncensored. Come on in, John.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me on your show. Alex, I got a question for you.
Sure.
You don't think that you're playing into the New World Order's hands by creating racial strife between blacks and Mexicans?
I'm not creating strife. I'm responding. We're fighting back for once. No, how could I be creating strife?
Well, no, I mean, the New World Order is clearly, that's part of their plan is to divert attention away from them and to use ethnic groups against one another.
All right, well, good point, John. Hang on, we'll hold you over the break. We have John from Nevada, Stan, Ron, John, and the Hopper. My guest is Alex Linder. Stay tuned, there's more. We have John in Nevada, and you had a question for Alex Linder. Come on in, John.
Yeah, I was just saying that I think the New World Order likes to play, different races against one another, and it's clearly their plans to create racial, strife between one another. And another question that I actually had, in addition to that one for Alex, is we've got about, I don't know, five, it seems like, third parties or more. I mean, we've got the Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party, we've got the American First Party, which I think started up in 2002, and we've got his party, and we've got all these third parties. Why don't we all come together as one and defeat the New World Order? That's what I'd like to see.
Okay, thank you for the phone call, John. Alex, what do you think? I mean, he makes a good point. All these third parties, if they got together, might be a formidable foe to the New World Order.
I doubt it. The only way that you're going to beat the New World Order is to have something that is formed on an explicitly racial basis. And all the things that he mentioned are formed on an individualist basis, and when you talk to them about race, they will run screaming away from you.
But doesn't that fly in the face of how this country was started?
No, this country was racist when it started. That's what's so beautiful about our idea. Jefferson and Washington were racist. They were never individualists.
Well, they were, but their plan for the government was based on individual rights, not racial rights.
Their plan was based on individual rights as people were qualified to exercise them within a white racial context. They didn't give slaves any rights. They would have said, that's insane. That's like giving a little kid the keys to your car and expecting him to go out and pick up some milk. I mean, it's just nutty. You don't let people like blacks vote.
Well, they did give them, what, three-quarters of a vote?
No, they were represented in that. They were counted that way for representative purposes, but they weren't giving them any kind of a vote. They weren't letting women. The only way if you want to look at it from a legal point of view, the only way you have any chance of getting even half-decent political leadership is to only let older white males who have proven themselves and established themselves vote.
Axia was property owners, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. They've established themselves. They're heads of families. They've proven stable over time. And even that is not really a great system, and it certainly wouldn't guarantee good leadership. But if you're going to let blacks and other non-whites vote, it's just insanity. And it's a measure of how insane we are, and it's a large part of the reason we've fallen the way we have, that we treat the most ridiculous things as though they're serious. Our party doesn't do that.
All right, let's move on to Stan in New Jersey. You're on the air live, unscreened, uncensored. Come on in, Stan.
How you doing, Peter?
Fantastic, sir.
Hey,
thanks,
Stan,
for calling.
Hey, Alex. Thank you, Pete, for the free speech forum. Alex, I got a two-part question for you. You stated earlier that you want to make part of the platform for the White Freedom Party concerning the Iraqi war. Could you explain to those of us who don't go to VNN how much it concerns the American public, that they should know the truth about why this war is happening?
Yeah.
And also, GoVNN is a great vehicle for learning. Can you speak a little bit more about the Total Aryan Alternative, the newspaper that you're putting out?
Well, the second one first. That's GoVNN is a daily news and commentary, as much good original stuff as we can come up with, and spun introductions, or spintros, as we call them, to the rest of the news. An Aryan Alternative is a paper we've started. We're getting issue number two completed now. It'll be 16 pages, and it's a newspaper for white people. And if you write to us at I'm at alinder@kvmo.net, or you go to one of the websites and send me an email, I'll send you a free copy of it, anybody listening. The Iraq War, what's there to be said? The guts of it has been gotten out. It hasn't been emphasized how strongly this is. Basically, a bunch of Jews in the U.S. working with Likud in Israel, who sat around and wrote a paper, thinking up ways that they can get rid of one of Israel's potential enemies, not even a real enemy, just a potential enemy, and they're more than willing to sacrifice your kid in doing that. And we've already had 1,500 lives have been lost, probably 20,000 injured, and you don't see too much written about that kind of stuff, but that's what goes on, and those Jews are going to use you. The Jews are using America, and the people who write our opinions aren't going to tell you that. They'll act like it's a handful of Zionists here and there. It's when you have a religion based on I am a God and everyone else is a subhuman, why in the world would they worry about your reaction? They don't care. They got no respect for us. Why should they? We're not organized. We don't defend ourselves. We just do whatever they say, and they send us off to die, and we put ribbons in our car and applaud. We're idiots.
Thank you, Stan, for the phone call. I have your magazine right here, the Aryan Alternative.
Yeah, it's a newspaper in tabloid form.
Yes, it's a newspaper. In the back of it, there are some quotes on Jews. Now, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that are listening and you're wondering why a lot of people that call up on the show are angry with Jews.
They say it themselves.
Well,
it's just
here are some quotes on the back of your newspaper, and then you can kind of see why a lot of people...
These are Jews talking about what Jews do to you.
And you can see why some people are suspicious and upset about the Jewish situation here. It says, for instance, Ariel Sharon is a quote, "Israel may have the right to put others on trial, but certainly no one has the right to put the Jewish people and the state of Israel on trial." That's Ariel Sharon. Then you have Rabbi Yaakov Perin, who says 1 million Arabs are not worth a Jewish fingernail. Now, and then he goes on, Rob Reiner says here, "Hollywood is run by Jews, even Disney." That's funny because Walt Disney was a terrible reactionary. If he found out that Jeffrey Katzenberg were running his company, he'd be spinning in his grave.
Yeah,
that's
Disney didn't like Jews because he'd done business with them, and they'd ripped off one of his cartoons right before he created Mickey Mouse.
And then it goes on to
say... They don't tell you that part.
Right, then Rob Reiner goes on to say, "That's a wonderful bit of poetic justice." But you see, there is this tension, my friends, and I have to agree with Alex, and he makes a good point. We are not addressing the tension. We are not addressing the conflict. We are skating around it. We are avoiding it. There is definitely a conflict between Zionists or Jews or whatever you want to call it,
and
the rest
people.
Of the public.
And there's nothing, the only way you're going to get the truth is through radio shows like this or on the internet, because white people don't own any kind of big newspapers. And even if they did and they had the ability to create it, the Jews would deny them advertising because they own all the retail and the grocery stuff that it does the advertising. It's, you would be amazed. A lot of you who have not read up on this stuff, who listen to O'Reilly and Fox, you would really be amazed if you understood how the system works. And it's not all that hard to figure out.
Well, and another thing, too, I don't have Alex Linder on the show, or anyone else for that matter on the show, to make any of my guests look bad or try to be antagonistic. I'm merely on an investigative journey. I want to find out what my guests are thinking.
And we appreciate it.
And that's why I have you on, Alex.
They should appreciate hearing that.
Yeah, and I don't, I'm, that doesn't mean that I agree with everything my guests believe, but you know what? I think it's important that we get to hear all sides of the issue.
Hey, can I give them one example of how easily they can be lied to and not know it?
Certainly.
Okay, you all know that Einstein came up with the theorem E equals MC squared, right? Except it's not true. The guy who actually did was an Italian named Olinto de Preto. Published it twice before Einstein ever got it. But Einstein's the smartest guy in the world, right? Because that's all you've ever heard from the Jewish promotion machine your entire life. Now get on the internet and look it up and see if I'm lying, if I'm fooling you.
That's a good point. I've actually seen that myself.
Yeah, and that's how easily you can be lied to about anything. That's what a big lie means.
Well,
the thing you would least doubt is a lie.
Sure. Let's go to Ron in Virginia. You're on the air live, unscreened, uncensored. Come on in, Ron.
Hi, Pete. How are you doing tonight?
Great, Ron. Thanks for calling.
It's a pleasure to be on. I thank you for the program. Caller earlier mentioned about the founding fathers, and I tell you, growing up here in Virginia, being a little bit of a history buff, I can tell you that anybody who researches the racial views of our founding fathers will find them explicitly that they were all racialist in favor of a white America.
That's right.
Recently, last night on a program, they highlighted Thomas Jefferson, James Monroe, and James Madison, three Virginia presidents, and all of them believed in repatriation back to Africa of American blacks. And that's the father of our Constitution, the father of our Declaration of Independence, and so on. So when Alex speaks these views, anybody who would even question that they somehow sound anti-American, just look who you would also be including among the anti-American clique, Thomas Jefferson and Washington and so on. I wanted to ask Alex, for myself and other viewers, how can you get involved with the White Freedom Party? How can we contact you, and what can we do to help out here in the general public?
Well, we're just getting the party going. What we have today right now is basically daily news, and we've got the forum, vnnforum.com, 24/7, where you get this kind of commentary and argument discussion. And GoVNN is the main site for the news. And then the main thing we're working on right now is an alternative, which people can buy at a very cheap price and distribute, and that's going to be the guts of day-to-day activity for the party. So we get going, and then there's a sliding scale. Anything you want to do, from running for office to helping with the media in any way possible. We just need – I've always aimed what I've done at young, aggressive men, and whichever women or, you know, people who are more passive or spectators, you know, they're welcome too, but I'm aiming it at the people who are the strongest. Those are the ones who can make a difference. And at this late of a date, nothing other than people who are basically going to reorient their lives around being white and living white can create a world in which basically our people are going to survive, because they're just going to get driven out otherwise. I mean, you don't need me telling you that. You can see on TV how whites are treated. And you see in South Africa, where we'll be tomorrow when whites are the minority. You know that Clinton celebrated that and said, oh, you know, in 2050, whites are going to be a plurality rather than an absolute majority. Well, the stuff on TV that you see is only going to get worse. There's just going to be more worse and stupider, louder and more aggressive rap. There's going to be more rape and violent crime, and it's going to be covered up even more than it is today. Ask anybody in South Africa.
There seems to be so many callers that at least some of the ones I've heard on this show and prior shows and tonight that concerned about the New World Order and that somehow the New World Order benefits by pitting races against each other. But it seems to me if anyone takes an objective look at what we call the New World Order, they will simply see that if it has one objective above any, it seems to be stamping out the white race wherever it exists. And hopefully a vehicle like the White Freedom Party and then similar ones will take hold, and we can have some hope for our people.
Indeed. Well, that's a very good point. You know, blacks are committing basically 1.5 to 2 million crimes a year against whites, and all you ever hear about is the occasional hate crime. Well, hate crime is a category devised by the ADL. It only encompasses about 7,000 crimes a year. It's a political category, and only about half of those 7,000 crimes are even violent. So stack that, say, 3,500 crimes against 1.5 million, let alone the fact that even in their own doctored categories, the blacks still commit more hate crimes against whites by a factor of about 2.2. And you've got really a ridiculous and dangerous situation.
Well, thank you, Ron, for the phone call.
Thanks, Ron.
Alex, I have a question for you regarding this. Do you believe, first of all, let me preface this. When we first started the show, I read an article from Stanford regarding genetics and the fact that you can determine a person's race by their genetics. Do you believe genetics is the sole determining factor of a person? Is that how you would determine if a person was worth
that's a good question.
Working with or not?
That obviously offers a pretty good way. I understand you can really identify absolutely where someone's descended from, and we are going to have that for the inside cadre of our party. We're going to have full tests so that we don't have any surprises on that stuff. And if I find out that I'm black, I guess I'll have to join up with Calypso Louis Farrakhan. But I don't expect that to happen.
Well,
but
it
is a good thing to know that you can precisely nail it down and go from there. I don't think that genes is everything, but it's got to be a good deal more than half, I would say. I mean, my basic guess is if you took 2,000 white people and threw them in the middle of Africa and they weren't killed off, they would recreate some sort of white civilization. Because it's not Christianity, it's the blood. You know, if you cut a little finger off of one of our founders and let it run free and it was able to somehow to grow into a person and mate and duplicate, I think that it could, it's the blood more than any culture. I don't have any doubt about that.
So you think that genetics is more important in determining success for a group than the culture it assimilates into?
Oh, sure. The culture comes from the genes. I mean, blacks don't create anything in Africa because they're blacks. They're dumb. Their average IQ is like 69. It has nothing to do with their culture. Their culture is the result of their being basically retarded by white standards. But why should they be judged by white standards? They shouldn't be. They're not whites.
Well, in the same respect, you have many blacks that have assimilated into our culture, and they've done very well.
True.
And they've gone on to do great things, scientific discoveries. Some of them are professors in universities. So, I mean,
now there's a very small handful of those, and there's a very huge heaping scoops of violent predators who have the amount of horror and turmoil they've caused in the white community far outweighs their contributions. I can give you a specific example of that. There's a guy who developed a new strain of strawberries. He was a grad student, I think, somewhere in North Carolina, and he was killed by a black. Now, you would have to go long and far before you found anybody in the black community who ever created anything valuable. And I know what they claim, but even when you track those down, they turn out not to be the case. They claim that black guy invented peanut butter, but he didn't.
All right, well,
hang on,
Alex. We'll be right back.
All right.
We have a full phone bank here, so hang on. There's more on the Peter Principle. I'm your host, Peter Schenck. Don't go away. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Now we're going to go through our phone marathon. Right now, very quickly, you've got 1 minute. John in New York, come on in.
Yeah, that last comment, I got to second the motion on that. I noticed a lot about, these people like Condoleezza Rice make it in, but a lot of that's political footballing because even in the schools, you know, they say, well, they come out and they become doctors. No, the blacks and even the Hispanics, they give them like all these extra points when they go take the civil service exam, which is a bunch of BS. They claim they want to be equal, but there's no equality there if they're going to give them special interest. And also they play the race card and all that other garbage too all the time. But mostly, you and I would have to go through a university with a B average, or you couldn't even get into the department. These scumbags, they get to get in with a C average, and they guess what? They get to operate on you where you can't even make it into a doctor school, you know, unless you can, you know, get a B-plus average or something
All
like
right,
that.
All right, John, you made your point.
Yeah, that's a good point, a very good point.
Let's go to Tom in London, Ontario. You got a minute. Come on in, Tom.
That's really fast. Greetings, Alex. I'm going to go through a quick list from a book, certain banned books in, book in Canada, of certain Jews that were in the former Clinton administration. Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright. Secretary of Treasury, Robert Rubin. Secretary of Defense, William Cullen. CIA Chief, George Tenet. Head of National Security Council, Samuel Berger. Chairman of Federal Reserve Board, still Alan Greenspan. Now, that's a Jewish-looking Jew. And now some of the Jews that are running America into ground. I want to shift the topic quick into Canada, what's happening right now. The two most recent appointees to Supreme Court were Louise Sharon, I don't know if she's a Jew or not, but Rosalie Abella, she's a Jewess and a feminist. Now, what's one of the first things they did? One, they denied to hear Zundel's case. They want to keep him in prison because he denies the Holocaust, by which Jews extort billions upon billions of dollars from white taxpayers. And the second thing they did, they instituted the same-sex marriage. Now, if those are not some of the things that wreck white civilization, I don't know what is. So if those people listening to the show that don't think it's the Jews, well, who is it, the Icelanders?
All right, Tom, that's your point. Let's go to Rich in California. Come on in, Rich.
Yeah, hi, Peter. I'm a first-time caller, and I really enjoy your show. You're such a breath of fresh air compared to the Rush Limbaughs and the Bill O'Reillys, and I just wanted to say hi, Alex. I was going to ask you a few questions about the White Freedom Party and
quickly
the progress of its going, and but I think you've already covered most of the issues right there. I would urge everyone to support the White Freedom Party.
Come to our news site and our forum and read around. There's a million things. If you come from conservatism, you'll really be surprised at what they're hiding from.
Rich Brooks calling, so I think you already know me.
All right,
yeah,
Rich, thank
Rich,
you.
Yeah.
Roger in Washington, quickly, come on in.
Hello, how you doing?
Great, Roger.
Hey. Love your show, Peter.
Thank you.
My name's Roger. I'm a moderator on the VNF forum, so I'm coming from a pro-white background here. One thing that doesn't get discussed at all, and one thing that has an angle that has not been seen on this that I kind of wanted to bring up
quickly,
is the religious principle. Multiculturalism is a religion. Humanism is a religion.
Yeah.
And the First Amendment to the Constitution says Congress shall establish or make establishment of no religion. And you know, I wonder if people ever think of that when the country starts to get into humanism and get into egalitarianism, that it is a religion. It is not based in fact. It is not based in science. It is a belief system.
Right. Yeah, the claim that race does not exist is taught in school, and it is religious because it is not true.
All right, thank you, Roger. Go to Doug very quickly. Doug, come on in.
They were talking about you recruiting the blacks and the Hispanics to your cause and everything. They're the beneficiaries of this system. They don't have any reason to want to change it. The ones that are sucking on the public mammary gland, doing absolutely nothing, getting their free ride, they don't want to change it.
That's right.
Then the 10% that are out doing stuff, they sure wouldn't want to do away with affirmative action. So you probably couldn't get 10 of them out of the whole country.
Right, Doug, thank you, sir. Alex, I want to thank you for coming on the air.
Thank you for having me, Peter. I've really enjoyed it. I hope the listeners have benefited.
All right. Well, until next time, ladies and gentlemen, ciao.